Hi.
Hi.
Long time no see.
Yeah.
I should show you pictures of my horrible laundry situation.
Oh, we should share photos because
I don't have a washer and dryer, so I send my laundry out.
Oh, okay.
And so it comes back in these plastic bags, like washed, dried, and folded. And the plastic bags kind of live in our room, and we kind of pick up a bag and dig through it and put it back on the floor.
That's awesome, though. So it's like a service.
Oh, yeah. No, I refuse to spend any time in the laundromat. So
that's amazing.
My time is too valuable. I will not do it.
Yeah. Well, it's also it's a pain because you can't really leave.
You it's can. Terrible. It's triggering. Not a good idea. It triggers me to my childhood, spending hours and hours, like whole days in laundromats, just folding. It's one of those things like I get very irrationally angry when I have to do laundry, like folding socks and little things like
socks baby is clothes. Like the only thing I can handle.
No, don't come at me with fucking socks. I hate them. And then I'll do sheets and towels. Okay. I'll do like the easy stuff.
What about a fitted sheet?
Yeah, I can do fitted sheets. No problem.
Oh my God. I just learned how to fold a fitted sheet. Do you know how long I've just been rolling it up and putting it in
I do house cleaning, right? Like I do people, That's I make true. People's beds and shit. So yeah, true. I do.
It's important,
sheets.
I guess. Yeah.
It's not that hard.
I just figured
it's
it out.
It's the little tiny socks. Makes you so mad.
Honestly, I don't mind.
You don't know what makes me even more mad, though, is when things are inside out and you have to, like, every single piece of laundry that I'm folding is inside out and I have to put it in. I just get so upset. Like, it's irrational how upset I get.
No, that's frustrating. When things are inside out or like, I'm trying to think of the, like, I don't like hanging things. That's my, like, that's my pet peeve. Folding, I don't mind. It's also just like, laundry's never done at a convenient time.
It's, you know what? And also it's never done. So you just have to accept it, right?
Like the clothes, unless you get like naked to do it, the clothes you're wearing are now dirty. So that's great.
There's a woman on TikTok I followed. I'll try to remember her name, but she does this thing about like self-care and how like not to give yourself a hard time for not being like a superwoman and doing all the housework and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And she does a lot of, she talks a lot about the psychology behind it and how you just have to like accept the fact that laundry is never done and the dishes are never done and it has nothing to do with your worth or value as a person and that's fine, you know?
That's awesome. I honestly just can't wait to live in a house because right now when we have people over, we have to clean like the entire thing from top to bottom and shut our door. Mm-hmm. But now I can be like, okay, well, all the laundry is upstairs in the bed and it's not folded, but no one has to see that because we're hanging out down here.
No one has to see it. I agree.
It's going to be great. I can't wait. Speaking of self-care. Okay. So this is like a double-edged sword story. Yes. What's up?
Okay. Hold on. Before you start telling stories, let's welcome everyone to our conversation. You know, every time I sing like that, the audio doesn't pick up. I have such a beautiful voice. It doesn't want to record it. It's
Seriously?
Only for God. Welcome everyone.
Funny.
Welcome everyone to
Welcome
Squinkcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brittany. And I'm not eating a burrito. Sushi's coming later.
Eventually we're going to talk about episode 20 of season 1, but first we're going to talk about some other things because we're going to avoid talking about this episode. For
it's
as long
so
as possible.
Sad.
Oh my God.
I want to talk about how I've incorporated self-care into my routine.
Okay, do it.
Well, not really. It's a one-time thing. My sister's turning 30, so she is not happy about it. I had a really hard time when I turned 30. I was like, I was married, but I was like, by 30, I thought I would have the house with the white picket fence. I would be married. I would have all these things. I would have a baby. And Mark was like, okay, crazy. Like, normally I'm very level headed, but something about turning 30, like, really threw me for a loop.
Wow.
So I don't blame my sister, but I was like, listen, Jess, you and I, we need to go to the spa. That's what we need to do.
Yes.
So we're going to the spa.
Yeah.
Not on her birthday, because apparently everyone wants to go on June 30th. So we're going on July 4th.
Uh-huh.
We're going for a full day. I am going to have to pump once while we're there, but it should be fine.
What It'll spa? Be good.
We're going to Elmwood. Elmwood Spa downtown.
Oh, that's so nice.
Mark's mom and sister recommended it. So we're going to go there. My mom's also going to come. And this is a wonderful experience, but there was one small problem.
What?
And that is that when I booked it, I temporarily, just for a split second, forgot that I had a child. So booked a spa treatment on a Monday.
Yeah.
Fully through the day from like 12 to 7.
Mark's nobody working. To take care of your kid.
Yeah. I'm bringing my mother with me. My sister's coming as well.
Babysitter, yeah.
I was strongly considering telling my dad that I needed to bring Wayne to the office and he just needed to watch him. But fortunately, my sister-in-law, she is a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. And the kids are going to be done school, so it's going to be crazy because she has three kids. But she very eagerly accepted my ask for help.
Wow, she's brave.
Oh, my, four children. There's going to be four children in her house. Yeah. So it will give them something, like her kids, it'll give them something to do, though, because they all love to play with Wayne. Wayne's very interactive now. We took him to Mark's dad's house today, and his cousin brought like this tube thing that he really loves. It's like, I don't know, it's like crinkly, so you can open and close it and it makes noises.
It's like it's a like dog a tube. Toy.
Yeah, oh, like 100%. But Wayne loves it. He wants to chew it. But he figured out that if you like put your mouth on it and then make a sound, it comes out the other end and it sounds so weird.
Wow.
So we were like, do it again. And he kept doing it over and over again because we were all laughing. Like,
he's you're like, all like,
I'm getting, oh yeah. We're like clapping. We're telling him he's a good boy.
So brilliant. What a brilliant mind. Brilliant
baby. But definitely like so he's well, he's 7 months and a week ish now. So he's very alert, very interactive with other people, loves other children.
That's good.
Loves most adults.
He's a COVID baby.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, it's been fun. Also, your hair looks great.
Oh, I had it in braids all day because I washed it this morning. So thank you.
You didn't professionally curl it. That's just how your hair goes. God damn it.
Just from being in braids. Yeah, I had braids.
Have you seen what my hair looks like? This is not fair.
Okay, we're not. My hair.
It's very,
I'll
very
never
nice.
Complain about my hair. My hair. No,
you
fine.
Have great hair. My hair is like
if
a princess.
If nothing else, Brittany, at least my hair is good. Jesus.
You're the whole package.
Oh,
don't even say otherwise.
Wow.
It's true. But anyway, I needed to tell you that story because I literally was like, I got
you forgot you were that's a kind of a good thing that you forgot though. Like you were having a moment of
maybe
like,
a little bit like of normalcy.
Yeah. Of but, like pre-baby thoughts, which is good. I think that's good.
Maybe it doesn't, Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're a bad mother, Brittany.
No, I got off the phone and was like, oh my God. He's not teething anymore. His teeth came through. So he is like a freaking angel now. The last 2 days have been amazing. He's back to his normal self.
That didn't last too long.
So, it didn't last long. Thank God. We didn't know what was wrong with him. And then we realized his teeth were coming in. He's a very chill, very happy baby, like loves to laugh, loves to smile, loves to like get your attention and get a reaction. And he was just like crying and screaming and it was just not ideal, but he's good now.
Oh, what a relief. First
he's happy, I'm happy.
You've unlocked.
Yes.
Whatever that's called in video games.
Level one.
Level one of, well, no, this is more than
a mouthful of teeth.
Must be at least level three by now.
At least. I mean, I maybe dropped a level when I forgot about my child for a minute there. But
No, I think you gain points for that.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, his teeth are so sharp. Do you remember ever losing a tooth?
Oh, yeah, when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like I feel like I remember it vividly, but you don't remember
falling out all the time.
I don't remember the getting the teeth part though.
No, of course not. You were a baby.
So interesting. Anyway, he has one very sharp tooth and the other one doesn't seem to bother him that it's coming in. It's like cutting through now.
Okay.
But
maybe he's gotten used to the pain. He's a tough guy.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
The pressure is a little bit better rather than two coming through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's very cute, so he gets away with anything. But I was okay. Are you gonna be okay?
Ah, poor sweetie. Well, how's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, it's not too bad. How's your weekend?
I'm a little tired today because I spent the whole weekend doing a boxing course, level two coaching course for boxing.
That's awesome.
I did my level one a few years ago, and now I did my level two, and there's probably about 20 people in the class, and one of my coaches from the gym actually also did it with me. She's been a level one coach for like 15 years, but it's one of those things in boxing, for Boxing Ontario specifically, like you can get your level one and have never boxed before, and you can go and open a gym. Like, it's crazy how, it's like the Wild West, you know?
Okay.
But then when you get to the level two, it's a little bit more, more intense.
Okay. Like, structure more, a little bit.
More structure, more information, more things to gauge. I don't have to get into all this stuff, but you learn about training, like, training, giving people yearly training programs depending on their goals, like whether if they're elite athletes or recreational athletes, that type of thing. It's very specific, sort of, you know, they talk about everything from different heart rates and performance levels and things like that.
That's
to get
so cool.
Maximum output and you know, progression and different workout. But I found it really fun. The moderators were amazing. I know them from Cabbage Town.
So good.
They're old. One of the guy that's was a husband and wife running the show, running the class, sorry. And they're, I'll just say their names. It's Miranda and Ibrahim Kamal. And Ibrahim was a boxer out of Cabbage Town for many years. Has competed internationally, professionally, and in the amateurs and stuff like that. And she and he run another gym now that's like a pure charity to help kids get off the street, teach them how to compete, teach them boxing.
That's amazing.
And they have really amazing experience. They've traveled all over the world. They've gone to the Olympics, world championships. They've, you know, done all kinds of coaching everywhere on different teams. And it's just quite amazing. So their knowledge was awesome. And
good.
The people who were there as participants in the course, I don't know, we just met really nice people, really good coaches.
That's so
that
good.
Are like there for their athletes. And there were a few women in the class, which is really fun.
Yeah.
There's not usually a lot of women at these things. So, and they're trying to get more women. There's not enough women in as boxing coaches, you know?
Okay.
Because they go to an international tournament and there's like 95% men coaching, you know, and there's coaching women. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah, that's unusual. Well, it makes sense, I guess, but that it would be like that. But it's better if you could change it.
It just adds another dimension, right? So it's quite, was really fascinating. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. And like, but the learn a lot of, it's very dense.
Yeah,
and it was two full days. So you get up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. You got to be there.
Gosh.
And you just like study and do this interactive shit all day. And then it's just like, I'm exhausted. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, we should get talking about the episode quickly.
Let's talk about this episode. But I was also going to say,
yeah,
I just started watching this show called Under the Banner of Heaven.
I Googled it when you texted me. I am so curious. It's good.
It's based on a true story.
Okay.
That was then written into a book. And it's about this horrible crime or crimes that befell the LDS community in, I think it's
so interesting,
70s or 80s. So I thought I'd be right up your alley.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I'm
in. It's quite fascinating. So it's all these people who've like fallen out of the church, stayed in the church,
yeah,
and then extreme other end of the church, and then like all these different types of Mormons. And it's just interesting.
Yeah. Oh, very I will watch. That would very much fascinate me.
Really good cast.
Thank you.
Creepy as fuck.
Okay.
Like, creepy.
Okay, I have to watch. And then I definitely
for somebody
talk
like
to you about
me,
this.
It's creepy.
For me, I'm going to be like, oh.
Oh, this is my friend. One day I'm going to ask you all the questions. We're going to do like a Patreon episode or something. I'm going to ask you all about being a Mormon.
Being a Mormon until I was like 16 years old.
Hey.
Then I was like, peace out.
Wow. Are your parents?
That's a long time though. They were. They're not practicing though.
Okay.
Yeah. For a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The more you know.
Wow. Do, do, do.
Should we talk about episode 20, The Graft and the Girl?
All right. The first thing I wrote
is so
down.
Sad.
First thing I wrote down in my notes.
I need to know and if it was the same thing that I was thinking.
I wrote, Jesus Christ! Colin's daughter is fucking dying. That's what I wrote down.
Yeah, that's really sad. I wrote down.
Yes.
Is Brennan actually reading anything that she's like, she's looking at this pamphlet like, of notes. And she's just like studying them and then looks up, has a conversation with Angela and Booth, and then just like puts it down, picks it back up. I'm like, what page are you reading of this pamphlet?
Oh my God. This is amazing. You are so funny.
Oh my God. It's a very serious episode, but like, come on.
Don't worry. We'll find something good. Don't worry.
This is the only episode in our experience so far where Brennan being a nosy bitch, sorry. Bad words. It's a good thing. Should we get started?
Sure. Why don't you start us off?
I can definitely start us off. So we start out by seeing a scene of Angela with Booth in the middle, Brennan on the other side, walking down the hall with Brennan reading some notes, and they're chatting and they can't understand why they're in the pediatric cancer wing of a hospital. And it is, as you mentioned, to go and see Cullen. They need to meet with the deputy director of the FBI because they're working on a case that needs, it's immediately urgent. He wanted them to come meet them there. No problemo. They're going to go through the case. They walk into this room after being told that they're children by Cullen because Brennan and Booth are fighting or bickering back and forth.
Because they don't know why they're there. So Booth's explaining, okay, he wasn't going to tell them, but then he says, okay, here's the story. Like, Cullen's daughter has cancer and she's here. Yeah. And then Brennan starts asking questions about what type of cancer it is. And then Booth tells her, I forget the name of this type of cancer right now.
It is something, it's a rare form of lung cancer.
You didn't write it down.
Theme. I can't remember what it was called.
I'm
no, I didn't.
Shocked.
I know. Usually I do.
Oh, I'm
disappointed
shocked
in myself.
Wow.
Mesothelioma or something like that.
I'm going to make you sweat.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm going to make you sweat and look up the name of this.
Mesothelioma. That is what it is.
Mesothelioma. Yes.
Typically contracted by people when they're exposed to asbestos.
Right.
Which
Brennan thinks is really weird because
yes. She
says it's super rare and certainly wouldn't be in a very young person.
No. And that was, he says that Colin, because Brennan is questioning this situation when they do get into the room. She asks Colin, what's going on? Like, it's normally contracted by someone with asbestos exposure. Like, right. Did you live in a house with asbestos? What's going on? They went back. They apparently, when she was diagnosed, Cullen like contacted all the previous schools she went to and all these different places that she had been exposed to ask if they had had any asbestos problems, which came back with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And Brennan's asking all these questions and Booth is like, shh, like, stop. Oh my God. And this is the only time I've seen Cullen not have a huge hate on for Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
Normally he is like, Bones, don't shoot someone. I hate you. You're the worst. This time he's like, yeah, you know what? Here's the, come to think of it, my daughter did have a bone graft because she broke her leg snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And I have the x-rays right here. Go ahead. Take a look.
Okay.
I'm like, who is this?
Sorry, I know
we're jumping ahead a little bit, but
no, oh, it's fine. God. Cullen is very soft. Obviously this whole episode, like, yes. I don't know how you don't like Cullen. I've always loved Cullen, and this actor brings a ton of gravitas. Like, he's very good in this particular situation, this role,
yes.
Like this whole thing. He's amazing in this whole episode.
Yeah.
I was more surprised that she had the room to herself. She had this massive hospital room.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think healthcare. About this a lot. Well, I guess you're right. Who knows? Maybe his wife is from money. I have no idea. But
maybe. I feel like deputy director, you would make a decent amount of money. Plus benefits, probably, with the FBI.
But we're talking.
Oh, it's huge.
Not just the room.
By herself.
By herself, plus all of the medical procedures and stuff. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, typically, like in the States, I think that getting cancer bankrupts a lot of people. Like, if you don't have proper insurance coverage.
Exactly.
So it's so sad. She's 15 years old. She's a beautiful young girl.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously has a life ahead of her, and she has this very aggressive form of cancer, which we find out very early on in this episode is very unlikely. It's very unlikely that she'll recover from it. She's doing like an experimental treatment right now.
Right.
And it's kind of like a shot in the dark, whether that's even going to work.
Yes. And during this scene, Angela notices that Amy likes to, sorry, Greg was just calling me.
Yeah, no problem.
Angela notices that Amy is an artist and likes to draw and paint and stuff like that. So Angela quickly sidles up next to Amy and starts talking to her about art.
And this is an episode where we're seeing Angela's very sweet, very soft side, which is kind of nice to see. She definitely tries to empathize. She tries to create this connection with the daughter.
Yeah.
At times it seems insincere, but I think
also
that's
we're gonna talk about
a writing choice thing. We're gonna discuss.
Seriously. We're gonna talk about Angela. Don't
you mean
worry.
The one-on-one conversation they have later in this episode that was so
there's
uncomfortable.
A few
yeah, we're
things
gonna get there.
I have questions about regardless. Cullen gives Brennan the x-rays. She looks at them. Next shot, we're in the lab and Hodgins is looking at the x-rays and he
oh
goes,
yeah,
holy moly, these bones are shit. Like, he's like, there's something really bad on these bones.
He calls them, what's with the moldy Gruyere in that leg? Excuse the fromage reference. Like, it is clear from just looking at these x-rays, which who took them and why did no one notice before now? It's clear to them that this bone graft, is from someone who had osteoporosis. And we're told, and Cullen was told, that this bone graft came from someone who was 25 years old.
Mm.
There's not a chance that this bone is from someone who is 25 years old. So they're judging from the reduction in the bone mass and the way the bone looks. They're thinking that this person would have had to be at least 60 years old, which is insane. That's way older than 25.
Yes. So it's crazy. So they were given the wrong information about the bone graft. So the next scene, so it's very quick, chop, chop, chop. So
extremely
after the
quick
scene
scenes,
at the lab,
38 scenes.
they cut to, I have a lot of questions about this stuff, so we can focus on those questions instead of the horrible, like, tragedy that's unfolding. Yes. Okay?
Okay, so love it.
Booth and Brennan are in a surgical prep room talking to the doctor who gave Amy her bone graft. Question, what are they doing in there? Is he coming out of surgery or going into surgery?
Hopefully why are coming they... out. Because this is supposed to be a sterile room and they're just standing in there.
Okay. There's a lot of sterile issues I have in this whole thing. Yeah. So they're like giving him the gears about doing the graft. And then the doctor immediately insults Brennan because she's a PhD and not like a real medical doctor. And
those who can't do research is what he says to her.
And then after he insults her, Brennan's like, well, just for that, you're going to have to perform the biopsy so we can prove that the bone graft is from an old person. So
this poor then, girl.
Yeah. Oh. And then next scene, Amy's getting the biopsy done.
Oh, yeah. This happens very quick.
Booth and Brennan are watching the biopsy, Brennan.
Yeah.
Or Brittany. Sorry, I just called you Brennan.
No, it's okay. You can call me Brennan anytime. They're watching this biopsy. This girl why is obviously in a lot of pain. Why are they watching the biopsy,
Brittany?
Don't know why. They're watching it as if it's like, you know when a serial killer is being like killed?
Executed?
On death row? Yeah, that's what it feels like. Except it's a 15-year-old getting a tiny core of bone taken. Booth asks Brennan if Booth is very close with Cullen and is obviously from the get-go you see that they're very close.
When did they become this close?
I have a feeling that there's this like separate storyline in my mind that he has this 15-year-old girl, that Cullen has this 15-year-old, he has his son Parker, that maybe that's something that maybe he doesn't know her personally and that maybe he's met her a few times, whatever, but they have this office rapport where maybe they talk about their kids, him and Cullen. So he feels like he's close with her. I don't know. That's how I justified that it wasn't weird.
So you have a fan fiction going on in your mind about another story.
Side story. Exactly. Okay. And in that fan fiction, Booth and Brennan end up together right away.
Okay, anyway.
Just cut that
enough.
Out.
Enough. It's enough out of you.
Okay, sorry. So she's in a lot of pain, and where do we go? We're back inside the office with Dr. Ogden?
Yes, Dr. Ogden. So Booth and Brennan, next scene, they're in it's a donor coordinator, I believe he is. He's like a doctor who coordinates donations of organs. Dr. Ogden, played by Mark Haralick, who was in Angel.
No, are you serious again? Oh my God. What about Alexandria, his assistant? Was she an angel?
No, she wasn't. I wonder though if he was also in Buffy. He looks kind of like a Buffy guy.
He
so
looks
you
very
tell-
familiar.
Yes, you tell. Well, no, he's been in tons of stuff, I want to check if he's in Buffy too. But while I'm doing that, you can tell us what happens with this conversation.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. I was just looking it up. So this is a conversation. So basically, they come in and they say, we have this situation. How did this happen? What's going on here? Did you take someone up on an offer to, did you take some sort of bribe or something? Someone was like, here, I'll give you my leg and I'll give you my cattle ranch or whatever as payment. No problem. That didn't make any sense, but you know, they are looking at the report. They're not giving them much more information than they already know, that a bone was harvested from a 25-year-old. Dr. Ogden is saying, listen, the confidentiality, and also I'm not the tissue lab, so I don't know who the recipient or who the other recipients would be or who the donor is. Basically, I'm not helping you at all. And Booth is like, there's a girl dying and you're not going to help at all. And he's like, well, it's not the fault of this office. So if you need any further assistance other than this, then don't hesitate to call. And Booth is just like, what a dick. Like, thanks for being so sympathetic, man. Like, we're
right.
Basically, you get the impression that he's like, well, okay, I can't do anything about this now, but I'll be back. The only thing he is helpful for is he grabs a pen and writes down that they use a tissue bank called Biotech Tissue Services.
Yes.
So that is how that is the link between the victim, or not the victim, the person donating, the donor,
yeah,
and the hospital.
Right. So
we get some the name of this.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Every scene, we get a little tiny bit of information.
Exactly.
So they leave there, and the next scene is with Angela, who's back at the lab, who's decided to digitize some of Amy's art, some of Colin's daughter's art. And I was like, so what is it? Angela's mission to convince Amy that computers are cool before she dies? Like, it's just
also,
like,
what year is this? Like, she's like, oh my
all
god.
All she had to do is scan it. What the hell? Like,
we will get there, but Jesus Christ, when she does show her this digitized work, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead, but like, what? How old are you? Anyway, sorry, we're gonna get there.
I'm freaking out.
I'm like losing my mind watching this, and I feel bad because it's such a sad episode. Like,
it
so
is,
sorry,
but
Amy Cullen.
Seriously,
yeah.
I was like, okay, Angela, maybe let's focus on something else other than, you know, computers are cool. Anyway, whatever. So the whole gang's together. They're all looking at Amy's bone graft.
Yeah,
and they determined the bone graft was definitely from an elderly person with terminal cancer.
Yeah,
and they say it's definitely going to kill her. And Booth says, well, if that's the case, then this is murder.
Yeah.
And then we have our intro.
I've seen 12 seasons of this show, including now rewatching it, and I can never think of the intro.
It goes like... I can't even do it.
No, it's too hard.
This episode, I fucking hate it. Ugh. It's awful.
I love
not
it
for... because the acting is bad. The acting is good.
The episode itself is actually great. And I'm
what's
just
Wayne
buzzing
doing?
My food in, and it's not working. Sorry.
Brittany's on her phone. Oh, buzzing her food. What'd you order?
We ordered sushi. It's going to be great.
My God, you're addicted.
I love sushi. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Yeah,
you talk because you're gonna like eat while I talk, so go.
No, I think once we're done I'll eat, but anyway, so we're at the FBI building. Booth and Brennan are breaking it to Cullen what's going on, that his daughter's cancer originated from this bone graft, and they confirm that he does the right thing, even though it's not the thing that you would expect from a father who wants justice. But he basically tells them, listen, this isn't an FBI case. I can't use the FBI as my own personal task force. Mm-hmm. So call this person at the CDC, tell him what happened. He'll continue the investigation. Like,
yeah,
you're done with this.
Yeah. What an amazing, Cullen.
No, it's good. It's sad, but like, good for him. Obviously he has a lot of
integrity.
That's exactly the word I'm looking for.
Yes,
because I'm pretty sure if I were the deputy director of the FBI and Wayne had a situation like that, I'd be like, call SWAT in, call the FBI in. I don't care.
You would totally abuse your power.
100%.
Like,
I know this
legit
for a fact.
When she looked up Tessa's information, right?
Absolutely. Well, we get our car scene next, which is wonderful.
Aren't you happy?
So happy. I always notice when there's a car scene, so that's kind of cool.
I do too now.
there's because every episode has one. It's they're showing them that like they're, it's like a way for them to be like they drive places. That's how they get from place to place.
Look, they're going somewhere.
It's travel. So Booth and Brennan are chatting and they're on their way to biotech labs. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I understood. Are you sure?
I don't know. Maybe, perhaps. Yeah, it's all in the same day. Yeah, you're right.
It's all in the same day. Anyway, so they come to this conclusion. I was getting ahead of myself earlier, but this is where they come to the conclusion. Basically, Booth tells Brennan this, until I can prove that it's across state lines, we don't have a case. But screw that. We're still going to work on it.
Yeah. Because they figure... They figure if Amy got a bad graft, like somebody else must have, and they figure there might be multiple recipients.
And Brennan was making the point that where they are located is so close to, like, they're surrounded by three other states. So it's very possible that within that sort of area, they could end up across state lines just from one graft or one donor.
Yeah.
Brennan is being very flippant with her language.
You think so?
Like, she's kind of talking about Amy Cullen as though she's already dead.
You thought that? Really?
I thought that. Like, Booth kind of says, like, Amy Cullen's not dead, Bones. And I was like, okay, yeah, I thought the same thing, because she's kind of like, she thinks it's inevitable that Amy Cullen is going to die, which...
Yeah.
That is the case, unfortunately, it seems.
I didn't get that at all. I thought Brennan was just being real. Like, she's saying,
it's possible.
Don't walk around with your false hopes, you know, like, it's too late.
I think everyone deals with death in a different way. And that's her approach to dealing with it, which is perfectly fine.
Question.
Yes.
Would you want to know if you were dying?
That's an excellent question. No.
Really?
And I say this because I think that I would be so consumed by my inevitable demise that it's like I couldn't enjoy my life. That exact issue is the central storyline, not really, it's like an important storyline in Star Trek New Worlds,
Strange New Worlds,
thank you. And this is something that is from, and like, you know this right away because the character, but right. Pike had in Star Trek Discovery
it was established in Discovery
that he finds out his future. He sacrificed something to find that out. And he knows exactly how he's gonna die. And when, which is, it like consumes him, and seeing that I'm like, oh. How about you? What do you want to know?
Interesting. Honestly, this episode made me think of Greg's father a lot, because he died a few years ago, had cancer, etc., all those things. And I have not decided if I'm going to keep this in, but I knew, like, he knew, because he had cancer 10 years before.
Yeah.
And he beat it, and he had 10 years cancer free. And he knew that he was living on borrowed time. Like, his doctor said, you're lucky you even got this far.
Wow.
And when it came back, he knew it came back. He said it was he could hear it in his ears. He could hear it. He said, it sounds like a washing machine in my ears. And he knew he wouldn't survive. And he told me that. And I did the classic thing of, oh no, you'll beat this. Everything's going to be fine. Boom, boom, boom. And I learned a really valuable lesson. Like, when somebody says something like that to you, take them seriously.
Yeah.
And don't, it's okay. Blah, blah. Like, don't infantilize them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just say, okay. Like, because then I'm just going to say, after that happened with Greg's father, my father told me he was done with life. And
oh, no.
I sat down with him and we talked like a month before he died and we talked about it. I said, well, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, keep fighting, everything's going to be fine, because he didn't want to fight anymore. So
yeah,
I said, it's okay. You know, I totally, you can go. Like you did everything you could. Like we had a good talk about him letting go, and he did. So I just, I don't know. Part of me, I hear what you're saying. Do I want to know? Because I also get very despairing and depressed.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. It's a good question, I think.
I feel like that's a good point, too. You got to gauge your reaction to news like that, depending on the person, especially. And a lot of times people are telling you this not to gain your sympathy, not for any of that reason, just to...
Yeah.
It's like they're conveying this horrible, horrible information to
it's
you.
It's a reality, right?
And they need you to be understanding and to be more of an ear, not just, I have a tendency to be like toxically optimistic where it's like, no, you're fine. Everything's fine. Everything's perfect.
No, but that's normal. That's normal. Yeah. And I like Greg's dad didn't want people to treat him any differently.
Yeah.
So he didn't tell anyone, you know?
Yeah.
He wasn't open about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Like, it's a good, it's something to think about. I think I'd want to know just so that I could tell people to fuck off that I want to tell to fuck off and, you know, do what the fuck I want and just not give a shit.
It's also, it would be very helpful from their perspective of like,
also, I would smoke cigarettes. I would totally smoke a pack of cigarettes.
Smoke a full pack. I feel like
start smoking right away.
Chain smoking. Like actuarial scientists, they're always guessing like what people's life expectancy is. But like if you knew exactly when you were gonna die, then you could save a precise amount of money, so you know exactly how much, like when you don't oversave. It would be very helpful. Maybe you'll stop paying your life insurance at a certain point.
Okay. Like, that's a bit much. I just think in terms of if I had a disease, I'd want to know. You know what I mean? Okay, I don't mean fair. Like, tell me when I'm going to die.
Fine. Okay. Well, we do get... Okay. We need to move on because we need to talk about how Amy is being shown her artwork projected on the wall by Angela and is like, how'd you do that? Wow. Has she never seen a projector?
Listen.
Like, not even a digital projector. We don't even need to talk about that. Like, what about the, like, the plastic paper that our teachers use to print stuff on?
What were those called? Overhead projectors. Exactly.
Overhead projectors.
I asked in my notes, why is this amazing? Why? Why like, is this amazing?
It's a painting in color on a wall.
All she did was scan it. And anyway.
That's it. And yeah.
Anyway,
it's really not that amazing. It's very nice of Angela that she did this. And this is when we have our whole Louvre discussion kind of started. The ball starts rolling on that.
Right.
Which is interesting because Amy at one point had talked about, like, I haven't had a chance to fall in love. I haven't been able to drive yet. Mm-hmm. Angela says, like, have you ever been to the Louvre? Mm-hmm. Have you, as a 15-year-old girl, ever been taken to Paris? And not only Paris, have you been to a world-famous art gallery? Anyway, obviously a stupid question, but that's fine. But Angela tells her, like, you appreciate art, you love art, you would love the Louvre. It's just unbelievable. So this kind
and
of
tells her she's going to go one day.
One day you're going to go see it, even though you have terminal cancer.
Even though you're going to die any minute. Yeah, don't worry. You're going to go to the Louvre. Like, it's just like, I felt like Angela was not doing this very well. What's going on?
Eric's throwing out a joke. He says it's unbelievable.
Dad joke.
Oh my God. Good one, Eric.
Oh, wow. You're so good.
I'm so supportive.
Very supportive. Very supportive. Anyway, I don't think Angela's very good at this whole dying kid thing. That's my decision.
Not at all. It's also very recent. At least we don't really know what the timeline is, but this seems somewhat recent to when she just lost her boyfriend that she sees 3 weeks a year. So I can't remember what his name was. That's why I'm calling him that.
Oh my god, it sounds insensitive,
but it's Lucas. I can't remember his name. I think that like she's already experienced death recently, and it's just very painful for her. She kind of talks about losing someone she loves at one point during this episode. Anyway,
wow,
for sure, Booth and Brennan were driving to biotech because they get there.
Yes,
tell me what they find. Will I eat this salmon roast?
Yeah, exactly. Eat your salmon. So, yeah, Booth and Brennan show up at biotech and they go to open the door to go in there, and it's absolutely empty and ransacked and there's no one there. So basically the place is shut down. They find out from, I think, a concierge or a building manager that the place shut down a couple of years ago, which is very strange. So then they go back to Dr. Ogden's office, the donor manager or whatever his, I don't remember what his role is exactly, but he manages all the donations. Can I ask you a quick question? Yeah.
Were they never able to rent that space in 2 years? Like at all? They didn't even try?
I know,
like they're
right?
Still, it like it looks like they just moved out.
Wouldn't it be exactly? Wouldn't it like, be more interesting if they walked in and it was like a totally different business?
Yeah, that would have been very interesting. Like, oh yeah. No, this is Victoria's Secret head office.
Oh, okay. Models That's walking cool. around in lingerie.
Oh yeah, Booth is like, Brennan, meet you at the car. Anyway, bad joke.
So okay, Booth and Brennan go.
You were telling me they go to Ogden's office. Tell me more.
They
about
go
that.
To Ogden's office. They burst in and they find Alexandra, his assistant, there when Ogden's not there. And she's very calm and she sort of like scoffs at the idea that biotech doesn't exist anymore. And Booth really thinks that Dr. Ogden is lining his pockets, buying, he calls them faulty parts, and selling them at a profit. And I just want to mention here, and I will make a note of it, but Booth's belt buckle is really prominent the last few episodes, I've noticed.
Is it the same belt buckle? Because I did not notice it.
I think so.
But, okay.
It's got an eagle on it for sure.
Huh. I would like you to post a photo of that.
I think I will. I'm going to try to find instances of it in many episodes because it was definitely in our pirate episode. 100%.
That's a good trivia question.
Yeah.
What's on his belt buckle?
Yes, exactly.
I'm doing it.
Regardless.
Okay.
So Alexandra mentions in this conversation that she was a little bit intrigued by their last conversation with Ogden. And so she started looking into it as well. In terms of like what this could mean, if it was really happening. Sorry, I'm just lost in my notes here.
Yeah, no problem. She was wondering if that donor had donated any bone to any other patients.
Right. Thank you so much. So then it turns out that yes, Alexander looked into the usage of grafts from the same donor, and it seemed that someone had received a graft recently, and their name was Kelly DeMarco. The next scene, Brennan had Kelly DeMarco's remains exhumed so they could check out her bones and see if she had the same grafts. I'm asking...
Like, the timeline on this is, like, insane.
How long are they spending on this non-case, first of all?
We find out later very soon that Booth is using his sick days for this.
Like, this is the second time. I'm fucking freaking out over here.
This episode is nuts.
Like, no one would be allowed to do this.
No one. He's like, I have a migraine.
Insane. What? So we find out this Kelly DeMarco woman died a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Zach is with Brennan. They're looking at the bone sample, and Zach says there's no telling when your number is up. And then he goes on to mutter about you know, where that saying comes from. And I looked it up, and it seems that it comes from the 1800s, and it refers to lottery numbers. And then consequently or subsequently military dog tags. I know that, you know, when you go to a deli or a bakery and they have, you take a number.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I always think that.
I always think that. Yeah.
Yes. So Booth thinks this is really annoying that Zach is making these muttering comments about this old idiom. And then Brendan goes, I find intelligence quite soothing.
And like kind of gives him a look like, screw off. Oh my God.
So they find out that the bone is definitely from the same donor. And this is where Booth wonders, like, how many more people could be affected by this? Mm-hmm.
This is where they're like, okay, could we be across state lines? Could it be, could this be an FBI case? And they end up getting a few, they end up getting Zach and Hodgins on board, and they try to figure out, they try to match other biotech grafts, ones that were acquired at the same time as Amy. And then they wanted to track them down and test them immediately. Mm-hmm. They want to expand, not just to make it an FBI case, but they want to save these people. Like, if there are people who are still alive with this graft and they haven't gotten cancer yet, they got to get that out of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they bring Dr. Ogden in for questioning. I said Dr. Ogden from Angel. He's brought in for questioning, and it turns out he was fired from another hospital, a private hospital.
Yeah.
So they assume he's like bad news. But then Ogden explains that he was fired because he accepted a bribe to keep the clinic open. And he says mostly when he, this is an interesting little thing about organ dealing, I guess, where he talks about how most of these organs are bought through the internet, like online and stuff, through email. No one actually meets people. You hear about an organ, you bid on it like an auction, and then they get the organ. So it's just, I never knew that was something that actually happened.
It kind of makes sense. Like, I was thinking about it when he was explaining it, and it does make sense because this is something that would be done so quickly, I think.
Yeah.
Exactly. It would have to be done like right away. Like, someone dies or an organ donor, let's go. Or
I wonder how they do it here in Canada, though. I think people are just on waiting lists, aren't they?
I think so. But then I don't know how it works. I'm not sure. That would be something interesting to look into. But so we find out, like, even if this company was a fraud, which it seems like it is because they go to the office and there's no one there, he wouldn't have known. So like, if someone was keeping up with the bids and everything, then how would he know better? And at this point, he says at the very end of this scene, he says, I swear to you, I'm not involved in this. I haven't hurt anybody. And when he said that, I turned to Mark, we were watching this together, and I was like, do you believe him? And we were both like, I believe him. I don't think that he's involved.
You're so funny that you do that with Mark. That's so cute.
I don't know.
So next Angela, who has suddenly started hanging out with Amy all the time, doesn't have a job anymore at the Jeffersonian, just hanging out with Amy. She's showing Amy her portfolio, and Amy absolutely loves Angela's art.
It's quite incredible, actually. We've never really seen art outside the, like outside of the Jeffersonian before, and she has like sculpture work and stuff that's quite
different.
Impressive, yeah.
Different from what we've seen, you know, with her her court sketches and whatnot. But
the lady's smiling because she lived a happy life.
Her face. Everybody's smiling, exactly. Anyway, I just thought, no, I don't appreciate Angela's infantilizing. She does infantilize Amy a lot in the scene, telling her she'll go to the Louvre and that she should.
Yeah.
This really made me mad. I actually wrote fuck off in my notes because she says, I think you should just stay positive. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go on.
Continue.
She should stay positive.
Yes. She says, you should just stay positive. Anyway, then Amy starts talking to Angela about boys.
And I guess Amy can't go on dates because she's dying. And I just thought Angela was basically ridiculous. And moving on, back of the lab. What do we got, Brittany? Are you still plugging in your computer? Okay, she's still plugging in her computer.
Okay, yeah, sorry, carry on.
Back at the lab. They start to find all these recipients of these bad grafts, these bad bone grafts. And this is what I found really weird. That Booth starts disparaging the guy whose bones it came from. Like, he got mad at the guy who had cancer in the first place. Like,
I thought that was odd too. Like, he like he got in contact with them and was like, cut my leg out. Give it to this girl.
No, but he was making it seem like that guy did it on purpose. This happens a couple of times in this episode, actually.
Like, he doesn't blame the person who gave it to them.
It's not that guy's fault.
No, it's not the donor's fault.
God.
But this is, this, they're working with Zach, and they're all working together. Zach, Brennan, Angela, Booth, Hodgins.
Mm-hmm.
And they figure out that they've identified 13 people, including Amy and the DeMarco woman, who have been affected by these bone grafts. Some of them have died of lung cancer. Some of them have been diagnosed with cancer since, but we get news back that this is now cross state lines.
Yes.
So Booth is very happy because he doesn't have to use the sick days anymore. And now this is a real FBI case. Tell me more.
Brittany.
Yes.
If Booth has been using his sick days, why aren't we seeing casual Booth right now? Why is he wearing a suit?
That is a very good question.
Where is my leather jacket and jeans? Where are my Ray-Bans? What's going on here?
That is a writing error, I think.
Why is he wearing a suit?
He doesn't need to be. He's sick. He's got a migraine.
Yes.
Colin, in the next scene, kind of gives him a little bit of shit, but is like, you know what? I really appreciate this.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of smiles when he tells it, when Booth tells him, like, yeah, I've had a migraine. Yeah, I've been using 6 days. And at this point, Colin is like, okay, we have a valid FBI case. Catch that son of a bitch that did this to my mother. My daughter. Hopefully not his mother.
Oh God.
And Booth kind of gives him his word, like, yeah, that's my intention. We're gonna catch this person. Which
the scenes with Colin. This scene with Colin and I don't know the name of the actor who plays Colin. I apologize off the top of my head. But I felt like the scene between David and the actor who plays Colin, there was something. Sorry, there's a moth in my room. Anyway, they were good together, is all I'm saying.
Very. It was a good scene. It seems very genuine.
Mm-hmm.
This next scene is very cool. I don't know why they're standing in the room. It seems like a problem. But we're in a room. An examination room. Huge room. It's a huge room. And Kelly is losing her mind.
I'm losing my shit.
Because we have this examination room, this operating room, where they're taking bone grafts.
They're taking
samples, sorry. I think they're taking, what are those called? A biopsy. They're taking biopsies from all these people. For sure.
What? It's x-rays.
No, x-rays. For sure, biopsies. There's inserting no way stuff into the leg.
Are they? Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. I don't think that's true because
I'm going to go of and the take next a screenshot scene. Of it. Oh, no, it doesn't allow screenshots.
No, I'm going to look it up right now. I don't care if this takes... I don't care. My question
I'm almost
is...
positive. But in the next scene, they do have x-rays.
They have x-rays of all the people's stuff. Yes. Where the bone grafts went. So why are Booth, Brennan, Ogden, and his assistant standing there in a sanitary environment? The nurses have their hair down in their face. It's crazy. It's crazy to me.
It makes no sense, but the filming of this scene is really cool. Every patient, they do a 360 on every patient, and then when they cross over the back of the like the head of the operating table, then the patient changes. And then the patient changes. I thought that was really cool the way that they filmed it. They kind of go around in circles.
I agree. But I still don't understand why they're standing there watching all this when sometimes these people are not wearing like pants and stuff. Like it's kind of a private thing.
No, it's not appropriate at all.
And
I feel so bad for Amy though.
The show, I'm finding this shot.
Okay, while you're finding the shot, let me talk about Amy and Brennan's conversation.
Okay.
Amy approaches this line of people waiting to be examined. And Brennan's outside because she realizes it's inappropriate for her to be in that room. Probably not why, but anyway, she's outside. She's outside this examination room. And Amy's asking, like, do all these people have cancer? And Brennan's telling her, no, not all of them, but.
You're right. Like, I'm just going to interrupt you. You're absolutely right.
But I think also, it's biopsies, but I don't know.
Why are they in biopsies?
Yeah, they shouldn't be in the room. But basically, Amy is like, I don't want this in me anymore. Like, I know that this is what caused my cancer. I feel sick to my stomach. This is absolutely horrible. Like, you need to take this out of me. And Brennan basically tells her, like, even if you take it out of you, it's not going to make a difference. And she does it very well. She deals with her very, very well. She really sympathizes with her, is very kind to her, and doesn't really sugarcoat it. And she tells her, like, whether you take it out or not, this is not good. Like, you may die, but think of all the lives that you're saving, because your situation alerted us to this basically dirty graft situation.
Yes.
These bad also, grafts.
Emily Deschanel is very good at the bottom lid tear. Like she has like a, she does this almost crying thing where she has like it sort of pools in the bottom of her lid. She's very good at that. Regardless, they're back at the lab after this scene with Zach and Brennan, and they're looking over the x-rays of each of, I believe, the recipients of the donor's graft. So all the parts of the body, and they've somehow pieced it all together to make it look like a person. But I don't know how, like, this is where it kind of like, okay, guys, like, you're not going to get the actual donor's body and face from the recipient's bones.
That didn't make sense to me, but what made sense to me, so Angela's component of this scene made no sense to me.
No.
Everyone else's though did, because, and it's really cool. Basically used that they started with that, with the putting the body together, whatever. They said, okay, now we know what he looks like. Now that we know what he looks like, now we can use all these other actual things to figure out where he lived. And I don't know the exact words or science that they used, but basically they're able to use the composition of his bones to figure out, like, depending on what minerals and things were in his bones, they're able to figure out where he lived, because they say stuff like, they figured out, okay, there was a Teflon factory, and so this would be in his bones, and like all these things. And they do figure out, they narrow it down to three people, which is, I thought was really, really cool. Like, they're like, okay, we're looking at someone who lives in Tennessee, West Virginia, or North Carolina.
Yeah.
Based on the amount of fluoride in his bones.
Right.
Because it was extremely low. So that narrowed it down to Tennessee, West Virginia, or North Carolina. And then from that, then they had high levels of C8. And that's a key ingredient in Teflon. So they figure, okay, there's a Teflon plant in West Virginia. So Parkersburg, West Virginia specifically. So, okay, that narrows it down. That's one of the places. So that must be where he was. He also had minuscule traces of nuclear subparticles. For some reason, Zach knows about a problem 15 15 years ago that happened at this very specific Brant's Cliff power facility. Very helpful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Zach.
Yes.
So Brant's Cliff is also in West Virginia. So we're looking at someone about 65 years of age, roughly 200 pounds. I don't know how they figured that part out. Who lives in West Virginia, died of lung cancer within the last year. It's perfect. Very impressive whether it's true or not.
It is, but not before Brennan and Angela basically call this guy a serial killer. I was just
they don't deal well with that. It's like, it's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
He was either dead when it happened or hopefully. This poor guy
worked all his life at a stupid power plant, got contaminated with C8. Have you ever heard of C8? Have you watched that documentary about Teflon? It's absolutely terrifying. You should never use Teflon pans.
Okay, good to
absolutely know. Absolutely awful what it does to your body, and the chemical is just terrible. Regardless. Yes, so they decide, I agree that it's really interesting, and I also, Is this where Hodges uses his laser, right? And he finds
Oh my god, it was so fake. There's
You thought it was fake.
Oh yeah, they just like shine a bunch of lasers at this like tiny little piece of bone and they're like, "Ooh." Mark and I were like is there a cat at the end of this? Just it's going to go crazy for the laser. No, but
is that a thing? That's my question.
It probably is, but scientifically probably, but the way it was filmed was very cheesy to me. But how else do you film it? I think that they did good for what it is. And I'm just being judgmental.
Laser diffraction analysis, also known as laser diffraction spectroscopy, is a technology that utilizes diffraction patterns of a laser beam passed through any object ranging from nanometers to millimeters in size to quickly measure geometrical dimensions of a particle. So I guess it was to look for, like, I thought it was like minerals and different things like that that would be in his bones from where he lived. So I thought that was cool. I thought the whole laser thing was pretty cool.
The laser thing is very cool. The way it was filmed, Mark and I thought was cheesy, but it was the actual experiment is extremely fascinating.
Well, anytime they introduce a new technology, you know, it's always like, you know,
a little hard to believe.
Yeah, exactly. Regardless, in the car, Brennan and Booth are tracking down these three people who are potential donors with these particular traits. And the two of the three are almost immediately eliminated based on, you know, how they died or what happened or what they couldn't have done something because it just wasn't possible. So they're down to this one person. Thankfully.
I'm sorry. The one that Hodgins finds, though. So Zach goes off and looks like a guy who's been like his casket obviously has been opened.
Yeah.
Hodgins finds out that this guy that he's looking for, this guy Blair Simmons, isn't technically dead. He's actually just frozen in a cryogenics lab.
Timeline. Zach exhumed a body.
Yeah, a whole body. And is standing beside it like, I don't know if I should open this. Doesn't look like it has been opened.
What day is it? Like, how many days between time that they discovered these minerals and all these things in the guy's bones with the laser to the time that Booth and Brennan are in a car driving?
Like, I thought I would assume that there's a lot of paperwork involved in exhuming a body.
You know,
there's a lot of time involved.
That's who we should have on the podcast. Somebody who exhumes bodies or something.
That would be very helpful.
Oh my God.
I'm very curious, though.
I need to know
how that person would be.
All this information. So we're left with one donor, possible donor by the name of Bill Hastings.
Yes.
So they go to see his wife. His wife is survived by him. She lives in a trailer park. Booth and Brennan pull up. They sit down and they almost immediately accuse her of selling Bill's body parts for money.
Because also, she looks like she should be his daughter.
Daughter.
Like, she's young. But
hey,
that's
maybe
fine.
She just looks good. I don't know. Whatever.
Good for her. You know, that's great. But
she was told by
this poor woman.
I know, I feel terrible because she's immediately accused. And then she was told by the funeral director at the time of her husband's death that it was cheaper to cremate the body. So then Brennan, after accusing her of doing that, says, can I have some of his ashes? And the woman kicks them to the curb and says, get the hell out of here.
She's like, come back with a warrant. Screw off.
Yeah.
Why are you asking me that? Like, you're already accusing me of, like, making money off of my dead husband because he didn't leave me any money. Her trailer park is super cute.
It's adorable.
She's like this little, she lives in a trailer park. Her trailer's great. It's got like little stones in front, like a little path.
Yes.
It's pretty nice. She seems like she'd be a nice lady if you didn't accuse her of murder. Not murder, but like profiting. Almost as bad as murder.
And also, if you did that with your husband's bones and he was dead and you hated him, like I would see nothing wrong.
Yeah, fair.
Except for the fact that he had was riddled with cancer, right?
Yeah, he had a lot of cancer. That's not good.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
Where do we go next? We go to the hospital, yes?
Yep. Yeah, we're back talking to Cullen with Booth and Brennan in the waiting area. And they're explaining to him that they talked to the wife. She insists that her husband wasn't the donor, but the evidence appears to be completely overwhelming. They're hoping to get a warrant so that they can gather a soil sample because Brennan thinks that she can get at least one or two bone fragments that are still intact, and then she can do some testing on them to show that there's a match between Hastings, like between the bone graft and Hastings, basically.
Right.
There was no insurance policy in place. Like there aren't really any indications that he left her any money. So that's giving me more indication that she might have a reason to sell legal grafts. Then the funeral home would have to be in cahoots with her because she couldn't just do that automatically.
Right.
And while they're talking to Cullen, the doctors approach and it's like a group of five of them. It's very intense. Mm-hmm. Telling them that they need to speak to him and Amy's mother privately.
Yes.
And poor Amy is like, I don't know why they're doing this directly in front of the window to her room and not off to the side. But she's basically telling Angela, and she grabs her hand, and it's a really special moment between them, I thought, telling them that.
You thought that was special, eh?
I thought it was so sad. Like, it's nice that she had someone with her because she doesn't need her parents to tell her. She knows that the treatment didn't work.
Yeah, but why is Angela there? Does she not have any
cousins? Oh, yeah, no idea.
Does she have no aunts or uncles or grandparents? Like, why is Angela there? This strange woman from... Not even her dad's work. Like, tangentially connected to her.
Yeah.
I feel like it's weird.
It's a weird connection. Yeah, it's true. Like, I don't know why
she's there. If I just showed up randomly at where would I show up? Oh, Greg's boss's daughter's. Like, no. Why would I go there?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like at all.
I mean, whatever. It's fine. Regardless, Booth and Brennan go to the funeral home and they ambush the funeral director during a service. And it's really quite funny. And Booth's like,
oh my God.
Brennan, like, slow your roll. I know you love this stuff, but let me handle it kind of thing. And the funeral director's like, cool as a cucumber, completely brushes them off immediately, doesn't want anything to do with them, thinks they're interrupting him, and he doesn't have any time for them.
So he's he doesn't even know who this guy that they're talking about is. He claims that he's never heard of this person, that the widow must have been mistaken.
Right.
He is the mortician. He doesn't remember working on that body. And basically says, like, you should come back with a warrant because my records are impeccable and there's nothing to double check.
Right.
Like, I didn't work on that guy.
Right. And this is where Brennan's like, better get those ashes. We got to get those ashes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is where I was a little confused.
Okay.
Because back at the lab after this, are we assuming that they got the ashes and this is what we're looking at right now?
Yes. At this point, we assume that they got the ashes. They're taking a look. And at this point,
you have to admit this is going everywhere.
Oh, there's like, so many scenes. Like it goes bang, 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 bang. Like we're banging out scenes like crazy.
Right.
By the end of this scene, after they do that analysis on the cremated remains, Booth is coming to the conclusion that maybe this isn't the widow, because they haven't, there's no unusual bank records or deposits or anything. That they took the grafts, gave her the cremated remains, and she didn't know anything about this. So now he's saying that he's doubling down on the mortician.
Right.
Everybody in, you in, trying to get a bet going, reaching into his pocket.
So I bet you it's the mortician.
Spoiler alert.
Oh!
He is a gambling addict.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We don't find out about this until like season 6 or something. So I'm sorry, I'm spoiling it. But there have been a few instances, and I wanted to let you know because I want to see if we notice other hints.
I thought he was an alcoholic, and you were going to say.
I thought so too initially when I remember when I was watching the show, because he knew that prayer, but it's not a prayer. The
Serenity Prayer.
Serenity, yes, that one. Thank you.
Yeah.
It is a prayer. He knew that. That was in a scene closer.
Yeah.
To
that's why I thought he was. Plus, he drank milk.
And then he drank milk randomly. But then we started seeing him drink beer. So I was like, okay, maybe.
Yeah, but there's non-alcoholic beer.
That's true. Okay. He's a gambling addict.
Okay.
There's like huge storylines about it. So now I'm kind of like. Maybe now that we're rewatching, I'm like, maybe there are hints to it. Like, it's not just something that they made up in season 6 or whatever season it comes up. Huh. I wonder if we're going to see like indications that maybe he like is kind of struggling with that, like getting back into it. Because I think what he has a chip at some point and says like, oh, I haven't been gambling in 2 years or whatever. I can't remember what it was, but when we do get introduced to it.
Right.
Anyway.
Wow. Okay.
So well, I wonder if he has the gambling urge right now. And maybe he's not on the straight and narrow with his gambling addiction.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So he's betting on everything. Take
some bets. Yeah.
Interesting. But before that happens.
You can cut that out if you want.
No, I don't want to. I'll decide later.
Okay. It's kind of a spoiler.
Before that happened, it was so funny. And I took a video of it while I watched it. Because Booth and Brennan were having a chat about how much you could sell your organs for or bone grafts. And Booth's like, oh, my bones are worth lots more than that because I'm so healthy. I drink milk and I work out and I eat right. And then Hodgins looks at them and he interrupts them. He's like, ugh, like, shut up already. He's like, now I have this information. So he interrupts their bickering with some very basic facts about what's in the ashes. And Brennan says,
tell me.
She looks at Hodgins. She goes, oh, geez, that's a revelation. She's like, really sarcastic. And Hodgins gives her a look like, holy shit.
I totally missed that. Oh my God. Oh,
unbelievable. I couldn't believe it when she was such an asshole. She was such a bitch. And I was just like, what the hell? Where'd that come from?
You don't see that very often.
No.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, they go back to the funeral home. And Booth and Brennan burst in on the mortician as he's doing some kind of embalming situation. And they serve him with a warrant. So then they start snooping around this funeral home and they end up in looks like the casket room.
Yeah. Except like Booth walks in. They are like, oh, look, there's caskets, whatever. Booth and Brennan are there. They're about to walk out, but Brennan sees something. She's like, wait, over there, they see this water line. But Brennan notices all these things, that the floor slopes toward the center of the room, that there's indications that maybe this wasn't always used for a showroom. And she's curious what's under the carpet, takes out a pocket knife. Like, why is that in your pocket? Anyway, takes out a pocket knife.
They're handy.
Cuts around where she guesses there's a drain and bam. Luckily, she gets it spot on. Like, she has this beautiful square around this, like, very circular drain. Martin walks in, the mortician, and is like, yo, you're making a mistake. Why are you doing this? Then Brennan looks up and notices that there's an air vent on the wall.
Yeah.
And she gets excited. Oh, sorry. Brennan notices. She gets very excited. She runs over, jumps up on this casket. This dude, Martin, is like, you're ruining my merchandise. Get off that, whatever. Booth is like, come on. How much could it possibly be? Apparently, it's $7,000. So caskets are expensive. Good to know.
Yeah.
He's like, watch the scuff marks. Please don't ruin the casket. I don't want to pay for it. And then Brennan starts to give this guy a lecture because she's like, you know, this room was designed to be washed clean. Okay, okay. But you know what you probably forgot about? Because everyone would forget about it, is the drains, or the bone dust, sorry, that would be in the vents. And she takes out a swab, puts a mask on, takes a swab of the bone dust that she, the, what we think is bone dust probably, and hops down. And it's just like amazing. Like, she's such a badass in this. Like, she takes charge. She's like, there's probably bone dust here. Bam. Also, screw you, Martin. Nice try. I got you, dead to rights. It's just a wonderful, wonderful scene. And the next scene, we find out that it was, in fact, bone dust, and not just from one person, but they think that they're, it's from seven, at least seven bodies that were cut up.
So they bring the mortician in to interrogate him.
Oh, yeah.
And Booth starts out pretty level-headed, but then he ends up kind of losing his shit a little bit on the mortician because the mortician isn't reacting. He's being very cool and denying everything and saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. And on the other side of the double-sided mirror, we have Cullen observing this. Cullen and
why he's there. Like, why is he there?
Well, it is at the FBI, so that doesn't seem as outlandish as them all standing there watching people get biopsies. That's fair.
Is there not seriously? Doctors? Oh my god, this scene.
Cullen is getting so like watching this happen, and the mortician's being very cool, and then Cullen suddenly just leaves the room and bursts into the interrogation room and starts roughing up the mortician, like demanding to know, like, what the hell he did to his daughter, basically.
Booth is holding him back.
Yes.
I think at this point Booth thinks that this guy is not the mastermind behind this plan, that maybe he did help out, but he's not the person. Because we kind of get that idea a little bit in the last scene. Brennan brings up the point that the person who's doing the cutting of for the grafts, in order for them to pass it as actual grafts, like, this needs to be done professionally. And with if you're going to do it professionally, you have to have some sort of medical training. And this guy, Martin, does not have medical training.
Right.
Like, he didn't spend any time in the service as a medic or a nurse. He's not trained as a doctor. So they really are trying to figure out who did the cutting for him. And after Cullen's outburst, they turn around once everything is kind of calmed down. They turn around and Bones is gone.
Yeah.
So something that he said.
Yes.
Tipped her off. And I think it was, I think it was the fact that they were talking about the fact that there were calls that Martin received from burner cell phones, various calls before, like during the time that each of these grafts would have taken place.
Yeah. 100%.
Who does Brennan go to visit? Tell me.
Well, she takes off and she ends up back at Ogden, Dr. Ogden from Angel, his office, and the assistant, Alexandra, is in there. And it turns out that she's actually a former medical student, and because she's just, you know, putting, arranging all these cell phones, like, because they're apparently, these cell phones are used to contact people. Or no, they give them to potential recipients to contact them if something becomes available for them to, you know, be transplanted.
Like a pager, kind of.
sort of like a modern pager. I didn't write too many notes about this, but basically she did all the grafting. The mortician sort of facilitated, you know, gave her the facility to do that. And then they would sell all the stuff on the market. And she used the non-existent company of biotech as her, what's that called? Like a shadow company.
Like a shell or whatever.
Exactly.
They have her dead to rights because she could deny this, whatever, but she got a prescription that she forged saying it was from Dr. Ogden.
Mm-hmm.
For a problem with her lungs. And the reason for that, for she needed an expectorant for a cough.
Mm-hmm.
She's very sick, extremely sick. You can get extremely sick from bone dust. Did not know this. Good to know. Not that I'm going to be around that, but anyway. So Brennan's like, she's denying this. And Brennan's like, we're in a hospital. Why don't we just go and get you a chest x-ray? Mm-hmm. And then at that point, she's like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Ogden walks in and is like, what's going on? This poor guy.
Right. Is Booth with him at this point? I can't remember.
Booth walks in. Once she kind of has the conversation, Booth walks in and is like, I'd like to read your rights.
Yeah.
And Ogden walks in right behind him and is like, what is going on right now? Man.
Yeah. So she's taken into custody, and back at the lab, Brennan gives everybody the rundown of the whole story, you know, of the drama that unfolded. And then of course, Angela, she gets upset anyway. She kind of freaks out and she leaves the room because she just is upset about the fact that, you know, well, she leaves the room because she's upset. And then Hodgins decides to go.
Of course he does.
To go chase after love. Angela and make sure she's okay. And then we find out from Angela that she's upset because, you know, we catch serial killers. We catch all these people. We catch these criminals. Boom, boom, boom. But we can't help Amy. We can't cure Amy of this horrible disease and she's going to die. And then Hodgins consoles her. And he gives her this idea. You know, you're able to do all these really wonderful things digitally and create all the stuff that she does. He says, you can create the Louvre. The Louvre.
I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a great suggestion by Hodgins. Good job. Way to save the day. I thought this was very interesting.
Hmm.
Angela is talking about, like, he says that you can create the Louvre, not a problem. But then she says, well, what am I going to do about love? She wanted to fall in love. Like, what do you have to say about love? And he's like, it's overrated. And then he kind of smiles at her. Like, he is very clearly into her. It is very clear. And I'm starting to see maybe some indication that she likes him back.
No.
Because he says it's overrated most of the time. And smiles. And that's the end of Squintcast Podcast forever.
Thanks for listening to Squintcast with me, Kelly Booth, and my and your new friend, Brittany Elsner. I think everything he does is creepy. If TJ Tyne ever comes on this show, I'm going to ask him why he's so damn creepy, because I'm serious. The way he said it, like, I was just like, yeah, he's into Angela, but this is a filthy, rich, bachelor, millionaire who is into probably all kinds of people. I just feel like you got fanfic with Cullen and Booth playing softball together.
Her.
I've got fanfic of Hodgins living his bachelor rich dude
like lifestyle. A playboy.
Yes.
I don't believe it.
So now we go to the hospital. Everybody's there. None of Amy's family is there except for her parents.
Yeah, that's super weird.
Angela has brought her basically Samsung. What is that called? Goggles.
Like
virtual VR reality goggles.
Yeah. But like in 2005.
And she's basically recreated the Louvre in virtual reality. Now, fine. Today, we are very spoiled. This is something.
Yes.
Is available readily to everyone.
I have comments.
Okay. I have a few comments as well, but you start.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll start by saying what happens during the scene is really beautiful. Angela did create the Louvre. She puts the goggles on Amy. We cut to see what she's seeing. She's in the Louvre. She's walking around. And that is how the episode ends. She's amazed by it. Wonderful. Why is she seeing herself walking through this place? I thought when you're in virtual reality, Kelly is losing it on me right now.
Fuck. I can't. This is the fifth or sixth time I've lost my shit.
She is like, this is such a sad episode, so I feel bad saying anything bad about it, but like, that is not how virtual reality works.
No. It is not how, it's always point of view. It's like POV yes. porn, right? Like, it's just all about POV, baby. And she's basically seeing herself walk around the Louvre in her cardigan from Old Navy. And just like, the worst part of it, I'll just That's say weird. This. Fine. Okay. Fine. She's seeing herself walk around. Whatever. But then at the end, it sort of fades to white. Like it's like a bright white that just like she's in heaven.
Yeah.
And
it kind of implies that she did die, I think. Yeah, that was the whole end.
She 100% died.
Yeah. It was very sad.
And now, Brittany, this is what I wrote. I guess she died. And then now we have to operate with the knowledge going forward that Cullen's daughter is dead.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm very curious to see how his character changes, if at all. And I think that this should be the turning point of his and Brennan's relationship, because while Brennan couldn't save his daughter, she cared enough to look into what was going on with his daughter. And in turn, because she was a nosy lady,
mm-hmm.
she saved like countless other people probably from the same fate.
Yes. Yes.
So because in my books, that's a redeeming quality. She should definitely apply for a gun now.
She's so desperate to have a gun.
Oh my God. So much.
Wow. Wow.
Like it was a phenomenal episode.
Yes.
Very sad.
This is where we're talking about whether we liked it. So go.
Yes. Sorry.
It was phenomenal.
I'm jumping ahead. It was a very well done episode.
Yeah.
Very sad. So that makes it less likable. But the episode itself was very, very well done.
Right.
Some issues like third person viewing. Angela generally.
Yeah.
Booth not being in his regular sexy clothes. you know.
Seriously.
Yeah, no, that was a very good point. Like, why are they in the operating room? There was just some like issues, but
yeah.
It was very like the premise was good. It was just a very sad episode.
Oh boy. Yeah. I don't have much to say. It was like awful. But at the same time, like I said, the acting was great. Even the girl who played Amy did a great job. Like
she phenomenal. Was,
she was pretty good. Generally, it was I have the same criticisms. Obviously, I do appreciate this. I do like getting to know Cullen more. I love and not just getting to know him more. It's not about getting to know him more. It's more about being affirmed at like the type of person that he is, like how much integrity he has, how much gravitas he has. Like, I think it was in the pirate episode where he came in and just took charge and Goodman was even intimidated by him. He has this presence that's very strong and
he's good at his job.
I like Cullen a lot. I like Cullen a lot. For sure. I'm just looking up here just quickly. I know we all need to move on with our lives, especially after this one. I was curious about who directed it. Excuse me. Oh, it's my Sanford Bookstever. Oh, look at that. He's the one who did Girl in a Fridge.
Oh,
and he did Woman in the Garden.
And oh, he's really good.
Yeah, he's a stalwart bones dude. He did do some interesting things, like that transition with the x-rays at the beginning where Brennan's looking at the x-rays and we switch to...
Yeah.
I just want to ask Sanford one day why he thought Booth, Brennan, Ogden, and his assistant would be watching people get biopsies.
That part wasn't great, but the scene itself, like the way it was filmed, going around the table. Cool.
That is a Bookstaver move. That is a Bookstaver.
That was really cool.
Classic. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of
Squintcast.
We're gonna get it one day.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Squintcast with me, Kelly Booth, and my and your new friend, Brittany Elsner. The Bones theme is performed by The Crystal Method. They can be found on Instagram and YouTube at The Crystal Method and at thecrystalmethod.com. Intro and outro music is by Twisterium at Pixabay. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Squintcast. Email us at squintcastpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at fab_empire_ on Instagram and TikTok. Brittany can be found at Brittany81523 on Instagram. See you next time.
Hodgins!